From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour was made back in 1965 at the Memorial Art Gallery in Rochester. A young designer was nervous for his first one-man show. 50 years later, Wendell Castle would look back at that event and say it effectively launched his career. And what a career it was. Castle became an icon in the design world. He said he wanted to put furniture on par with sculpture. His designs were always striking. And if any single quote best described Wendell Castle's view of creating furniture, maybe it was this. He told the University of Rochester a couple of years ago, quote, "If you're doing anything you already know how to do, you're not really doing anything. So the excitement for me has been doing things on the edge, doing things that are risky. And the minute people start liking it, stop doing it and move on to something else," end quote. Castle wasn't born in Rochester, but he put down deep and lasting roots here. He began teaching at RIT in the 1960s. He has relationships, of course, with the MAG, the college at Brockport, and that's just getting started. He chose to live here, even though he exhibited around the world. We're talking about Wendell Castle because he passed away this weekend at the age of 85. Now, for the last several decades, he explained that he mostly exhibited in New York City and other bigger cities, but he was always excited to show his work and be in Rochester. This hour, a conversation about his legacy. Jonathan Binstock is the director of the Memorial Art Gallery. Welcome back to the program, Jonathan. Thanks for being here. Also here is Mimi Tilton, a longtime friend of Wendell Castle. We're all sorry for you, Mimi, and his loved ones. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking me.
And Wendy Marks is the University Gallery's director at RIT. Wendy, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Mimi, I'll start with you as a longtime friend of Wendell. How are you doing today? I mean, this feels sort of surreal, given that so many people were still working with him. He kind of worked right up to the end of his life.
Well, he did. The last few weeks have been trying for him and for the family, for all of us. And we miss him. We're doing the documentary with WXXI. We're hoping for maybe a few more interviews, for a few more shows that are coming up that he would be talking about. But it is what it is.
WXXI has been working for the last year or so, as Mimi said, with Wendell Castle and many others to produce a one-hour documentary about his life and work. And so that film includes the recent MAG exhibit, which we'll talk about, also exhibits in other cities, including New York City. That documentary due out this spring. It'll be on WXXI TV and distributed nationally to PBS stations. What are you going to miss most about Wendell Castle?
Wendell Castle. I was really privileged to be a part of this documentary making because he's been a long, long time friend and very close with me and my husband. But it gave me insight into actually his work, which is where probably Jonathan and, well, Wendy on both sides know him best. But I got to know, to really understand what it was that made him tick and what it was that made him the kind of artist that he became and what it meant to him. So that was really a privilege of mine to have been part of this.
Jonathan, there was the recent exhibit, but that relationship for decades with the MAG. How is the MAG handling this? How are you feeling today?
Well, I'm sad. We're all very sad about this loss. Wendell, you know, is really a key gravitational force in the solar system of Rochester's art world. Mm-hmm. So it's as if a planet has dropped out of the solar system and we now have to reorient ourselves and find a new rhythm, you know, our new place, or that is, which, you know, all of us who kind of orbited around Wendell, he orbited around us. You know, I met him, you know, he's been a part of my experience of this scene since the moment I arrived almost. So, you know, he was very much present and a contributing force here. So we're feeling that. We're feeling that loss.
Hmm. Wendy, how about you? Can you tell me a little bit about the legacy? If I asked you what's Wendell Castle's legacy at RIT, we could just spend the next hour and I would just have to walk away and give you the mic.
That's a big subject,
but
I'm not even really sure I could start to address it. But I wanted to just say one thing.
Yeah.
You were just asking people how they were feeling today. And the one thing that I remember him saying to me one time, we were discussing a piece of his work that was, needed some repair and it was sort of lamenting something about that. And he said to me, he said, "I'm glad it can be repaired," he said, "but, you know, I don't look back. I just look forward." And I think I've carried that thought with me through this whole event of knowing Wendell and now not having Wendell in our lives, but boy, does his legacy loom large. And the number of people that he affected and mentored and just took a few moments out of his incredibly busy life to sit down and talk with them. He's always been so generous with his time. Both he and Nancy Jers, his wife, always were arms open to students coming down to their studios, and still are. Open up their house. Just have a moment to realize that these people that came to Rochester are human beings, and humble and ultimately creative, but willing to live their lives among us mere mortals. And I just appreciate having known Wendell, and our thoughts go out to his family.
I think, Mimi, the mark of humility is when we can look at someone in the way that Wendy just described, living among us mere mortals, but when you're around them, you don't really feel like they consider themselves a star.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, they were never happier, Wendell particularly, than sitting on the dock and on a Sunday afternoon doing nothing, having a drink or whatever. And someone asked me, too, about Wendell's knowledge of his, if you will, fame and impact on international art, which he was totally, totally aware of, yet didn't affect him in the least as far as his humility and his graciousness.
Can I share a couple of stories? I think we've got a couple sound clips that I'd like to hear. The first is going to come from Josh Owen, a professor and chair of RIT's Industrial Design Program. The Paris story, Rob. This is Josh talking about being in Paris and the reverberations of Wendell Castle around the world. Let's listen to that, if we could.
My wife and I were in Paris for a business trip, and we had heard from Wendell that the Carpenter's Workshop Gallery had a number of his pieces on view. So we popped by to have a look and knocked on the door and were received warmly by the staff. And when we let them know that we were friends and colleagues of Wendell's, they immediately called for champagne and told us, "Tell Wendell to make more work. We can't keep it here. We can't keep it in stock. It sells so quickly."
I love that. And as maybe mentioned, WXXI has been working on this documentary, so we've got a chance to hear from Wendell, and you're going to in this documentary that's forthcoming in the spring. But let's listen to Wendell talking about whether he sought fame. Let's listen.
I believe that I wasn't conscious of trying to be famous. I don't think that thought occurred to me. I wanted to be successful. And I'm not sure that success and famous are they don't necessarily go together. But I felt so strongly about the vocabulary that I was going to be able to bring to the table that I needed to establish it as mine. Because I thought, which never turned out to be true, but I thought there'd be a lot of other people who, you know, once they saw what I was doing, they might think, "Well, that's a pretty good direction. I think I'll go that way too." And so I felt, in a sense, like farmers may have felt out in the Midwest in the early part of the 19th century, when the government would give free land to farmers, and they would get as much as they could put a fence around in 24 hours. Well, I thought, I've got to put a fence around this, and I've got to define my vocabulary in its entirety, you know, different kinds of things, but all sort of based upon lamination and carving. And so I worked very, very hard in those days, and which was not hard to do. I mean, I worked every night till midnight, and which didn't seem crazy at the time, and was really able to make a dent very quickly and get some reputation. But I don't think I ever thought about that would lead to any kind of fame.
So Jonathan Binstock in the WXXI documentary, you say that he's defined an entire category of art furniture. I mean, this is a man, he's kind of talking about a little bit of his mindset about it, but not assuming it's going to make him famous. Well, it did. Not easy to kind of create your own category of art, is it?
No. I'm just sitting here thinking how nice it is to hear his voice.
Yeah.
He was so gentle and sharp and present and thoughtful and articulate. I mean, so laid back and so forward thinking, you know, so visionary. Really remarkable man, very special person. But just to say a word on what you just said, Evan, yeah, Wendell was a great artist. We can think of many great artists. Very few of those great artists expand our ideas about what the category of art includes, or what categories are possible within that paradigm, if you will, of art, which is pretty broad. I mean, so he made furniture that was sculpture. He made sculpture that was furniture. That's amazing, and in itself, he blurred the line between these categories, which we assumed to be pretty firm, and showed us how there's space in there for more invention, more conversation, advanced thinking that will further the dialogue.
Mimi, how aware of his fame was he?
Oh, he was certainly aware of his fame.
He's aware of his fame, but how aware were people in his orbit that he was aware of his fame?
I think, sadly, that Rochester has dimmed in that orbit. I find his reputation internationally and nationally seems to overshadow. I've talked to so many young people about what I was doing with the film, et cetera, and so many of them said, oh, Wendell Cass, I guess I better Google him.
And that's a shame in Rochester.
It is, but it's understandable. He has become a world person more than just a local person, which was wonderful. I was just going to add, listening to the discussion on the Paris opening or gallery, that my husband and I went to his opening, I guess it was 2 years ago or whatever, that he had in Paris, and the Carpenter's Gallery, and got in there about 7 o'clock when it was just starting. And I said, Wendell, gosh, look at all this stuff. It's great. Have you sold anything? Yeah, it's all sold. I said, oh, okay. He said, I got to get home and make some more stuff. So his reputation internationally is just astounding.
Okay, so on that note, let's turn to Wendy and Jonathan, but let's hear as much of Wendell as we can in his own words, because it's on that note that I go back to that quote from a couple of years ago when he talked about how he didn't want to stay with something too long once it became popular. He wanted to challenge himself and move to other things. Here's him talking to WXXI about, you know, when things get too popular.
First of all, I don't really want a show that's popular. I worry if everything sells that I'm not doing it right. It's not powerful enough. It's too easy. It's too sweet, or you know, something bothered me that sold everything. If I have made any contribution at all, it's because of the risks I've taken with oddball ways of approaching furniture making.
So Wendy, assuming, by the way, that I know nothing about sculpture and art, and I'm the least qualified person to opine on it, I think what I'm hearing Wendell say there is like the musician who doesn't just want to do pop radio pablum. And Wendell Castle was never in danger of doing pop anything pablum. But the second it starts to feel easy to the audience, it sounds like he wanted to challenge himself. Is that what you're hearing? And can you weigh in on that mindset that the artist may have?
Well, I can tell you what my experience was with Wendell. I am not an expert on his career and his life. I had the great honor of being friends with him. My husband and I spent a lot of time with Wendell and Nancy, and will continue to Nancy. When I helped organize an exhibition at the University Gallery at RIT, Wendell came to Rochester because he was recruited to come teach at the School of American Crafts and in the woodworking department. And ironically, he was not a furniture maker. He was a sculptor, and he was an industrial design student. Mm-hmm. So when he got here, he actually learned a lot of the craft from the students that were studying furniture making. And somewhere along the line, you know, his brain working differently than everybody else's, he started to separate and remeld these disciplines. But when I was thinking about having an exhibition, or didn't have to think very long about having an exhibition of Wendell's work, I realized, I asked him one time, I'd been in his studio, and he had every single drawing that he had ever done since, I believe, college, and maybe before that. And the thing that I learned about Wendell is that he drew for several hours every day. So he'd go to his studio, and he had this big, beautiful, open, white, sunlit space with a tabouret and large reams of paper, and he would just draw. So I thought, well, I asked him, I said, have you ever had an exhibition of your drawings? And he lit up, and he said, no, I have not. We were mulling it around, so I came up with the title of an exhibition, which I thought was, you know, brilliant. And it was Wendell Castle Imagined, a Revelation of the Creative Process. And then I started, you know, throwing that title around, and then I realized I have no idea what his creative process was, and I needed him to help me define that. So he invited me down to his studio. I'd go down, and he had these flat files with all these drawings in them, and they were separated out by decades. I mean, he could pull out 1950, 1960, 1970. He would get down on his knees, and I have a couple pictures of him doing this, and he'd pull open one of these big file drawers, and he'd pull a drawing out, and he'd hold it up, and he'd just stare at it and look at it, and then he'd set it aside, and he'd take another one out and do the same thing. And he wasn't speaking to me about anything. I was waiting for pearls of wisdom. I watched him look through his drawings for about 45 minutes, and then he'd close the drawer, and he'd look at me, and he'd say, thank you very much for coming by. And then he'd show me out the door. And this happened on three separate occasions, and I started having some concerns that I'm not going to be able to write about anything. So I called Becky Simmons, who's our archivist at RIT, and I said, help me. So let's go down together. Let's pull out of Wendell what he thinks is creative, you know, describe your creative process. We went down, and he started talking, and it all came pouring out. And, of course, neither one of us had the app downloaded on our phone to record anything, so we're writing, like, notes like crazy. Then we got together afterwards, compiled the notes. I sent them to Trish, who is Wendell's business manager, studio manager, and she read through the notes to Wendell, and then she got in contact with me, and she said, Wendell wants to know, what's all this stuff? And I said, Trish, I need an artist statement. And she said, well, he doesn't like to write about, now he can obviously speak about his work, he doesn't like to put it down in writing. So I said, well, if he doesn't do it, you know, you're seeing what's kind of starting to formulate. And she said, well, I'll talk to him. And 2 days later, the most eloquent, beautiful artist statement ended up in my email box, and Wendell wrote it. I don't think he has written many artist statements in the past, so we had the privilege of putting it up on the wall to explain what these drawings were, and of course his maquettes were the next step. He carved all those little models by hand. So that was how he began to formulate the final pieces. But it's a long and thoughtful process.
He did tell WXXI, even with the advent of computer technology, he wanted to draw with the pencil. He didn't want to design in the computer.
And no.
Jonathan, can you also speak to us before we grab our first phone call? And John, we'll come to you in just a second. Can you tell us what you think about, you know, his work and the way he did want to either challenge himself or an audience? In other words, reflect on that idea that the second it felt too easy and popular, he was almost uncomfortable with it.
That's an important point to settle on. There are many types of artists, and Wendell was the type who was always searching, and as a result, always innovating, and always trying new materials, new techniques, new tools. He had a vocabulary. He settled on a way of communicating or expressing himself through the materials he chose. But this idea of turning to a computer and a digital a device that can make a three-dimensional scan of a hand-carved model and then transmitting this three-dimensional scan to a robotic arm, massive CNC milling machine to assist in the carving of the laminated wood blocks was brand new. And if Wendell was 85 when he died the other day in 2018, how old was he in 2010? Just a mere 8 years ago when he acquired that robot, that robotic carving arm. I mean, that's amazing. So he was about in his late 70s, all, you know, continuing to just search new ways of thinking and working. And everything that came from him was very much his, of his vocabulary, of his lexicon, and then new again. Remarkable. I mean, how many people do you know at that point in their life who can kind of reinvent themselves?
Now, so Jonathan, you know, he didn't want everybody to like everything easily. Did you ever see his work and go, you know, Wendell, I don't get it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've seen objects or and maybe periods that were less successful to my mind. My opinion. But here's a guy who worked for more than 50 years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, and who took risks, who tried new things. So that's all right.
And that's inevitable. I mean, maybe did you ever talk to him and say, look, my friend, you're brilliant, but what is this?
Not directly. but so much of that came out again in being privileged to watch some of the interviews and the filming of the documentary. And he was well aware that certain things didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
And he was well aware that, but he didn't care. I mean, it was all part of the process. You just keep looking forward and doing whatever.
I'll add that that sounds true to me, Mimi. He definitely could look on a piece and say, in retrospect, that one wasn't so good. But he also had a habit of saying and thinking the very last piece that he made was the very best thing he had ever done. And when he came into the Corcoran, I used to work at the Corcoran in Washington,
You're
D.C.
You're not there anymore.
I'm not there anymore. When he came into the Memorial Art Gallery, and I said, Wendell, what's the best piece in the show? What's your favorite piece here of the 40 or so major works we had? And he said, oh, this one here, the one I just finished.
What is going to be his last piece then?
I don't know. The latest work completed for the Memorial Art Gallery was this really neat, I had a title and I can't recall what it was, but it was the one with the gold leaf frame that came off the wall. So the chair was situated within a picture frame almost, a three-dimensional rectangular form that was leafed in gold the way traditional frames are. Really out there, very...
Is that the one that somebody almost dropped while they were putting it up?
I don't think so.
Oh,
no. Nobody almost dropped a work of art that was going up at the Met.
And that wasn't at the University Gallery at RIT either.
No, that's never happened ever in Rochester.
Take good care.
Let me get a phone call. John in Rochester John's got a story to share on Wendell Castle, who passed away this past weekend. Go ahead, John.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to relay a personal experience that I had with his art. My dad was an artist and was always a big fan of Wendell Castle in the 60s and 70s, and commissioned him in 1979 to design a box for him. My dad was also a big cigar smoker, and it was just a box to hold cigars. And I remember when I was 8 years old going out to his farm, I believe it was in Scottsdale then, to pick up the box, and didn't think much of it, and I had never heard of Wendell Castle at that age. But when my dad passed away, I inherited some of his stuff, and I had this box. And before Wendell Castle had passed away, I contacted the studio, and they were nice enough to send me the original receipt that showed what my dad paid for it and what the box was made out of. And it's just a really amazing thing to have this thing sitting in my bedroom staring at it, that I have this connection not only with my dad, but that time of his life, and just how incredible it was that he could just contact Wendell Castle, not even knowing him, and being able to pay him to make a box for him that's sitting in my bedroom, and it's just very special to have that there to live with the art and just how it impacts me every day. It's just a very special thing and very sad when I think about Wendell Castle not being around anymore.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for that story. It's a beautiful story. It is not only about Wendell, it is about the power of art. And I'm thinking of it. This is an opportunity to just point out for all of the listeners how an object can connect a person such as John to an idea, to other people, to a moment, an experience, and how that object can carry all of this meaning in a very powerful way. That is what is magical about art and so important about art. And it's fantastic that you can describe that experience within the context of Wendell and this object that you live with.
When you have dinner with friends and they have mass-produced prints on the wall, do you just go home?
What I do, Evan, is I think about the bottle of wine you suggested I drink, and I open that.
You're accusing me.
No, I go back to I think people have meaningful connections to objects, and I guess I would judge negatively a person who couldn't say anything about the stuff that they're hanging in their house, right? I'd like to hear stories about why a person chose something, why it's there, how they got it. And, you know, not everybody cares. So you can't expect that of
everybody. I was being mostly facetious.
Well, I get serious about this stuff, sorry.
I know you do. And actually, I think you're right, though. John's phone call is an example, a reminder of the power of art, the connective power of art, the way it can connect us across a generation. I think he says it goes back to the 1970s.
People come and go. That's what we're talking about today. But people also have legacies. And even if you're not in a position to be Wendell Castle, you are in a position to have a physical, a real connection to an important legacy in some way or another.
John, thanks for the phone call. We're late for our only break, and we're going to come back in a moment. You're going to hear more from Wendell Castle in his own words. We're fortunate at WXXI to have so much of the comments that Wendell made, really mostly in the past year, as we get ready for the WXXI documentary on Wendell Castle that will be out in the spring. The great artist, designer, passed away this past weekend, and we're talking to Jonathan Binstock, director of the Memorial Art Gallery. Mimi Tilton is a longtime friend of Wendell Castle, and Wendy Marks, also a friend and the University Gallery's director at RIT. Let's get that break, and we'll come back right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, just weeks into his first term as sheriff, Todd Baxter is joining a conference aimed at opioids. He said that's what he would do during the campaign. We're going to hear from some of the organizers about many prongs to dealing with this problem in our community, faith-based efforts and more. Dealing with opioids first hour. In our second hour, corporal punishment. Is this the end of spanking? Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mike in Rochester on the line has another comment to make about Wendell Castle. Go ahead, Mike.
I just was in listening to you all. I just think of having seen his artwork. My wife and I were in Washington Museum, or in Philadelphia, where he has a piece in a museum, or seeing him, and I'm a native Rochesterian. I think his really greatest contribution, when I hear you talk about a bottle of wine, or if there are prints on a wall versus the original artwork, his at core being an artist, also an educator, as a sharer of his great gifts, but also in helping people who create art, the bigger market being the amateur art market, I guess. He inspired people to find the creative force within themselves and to use it and to enjoy it and benefit from it and have that be infectious. He infected us all with that. And I think if there is a legacy for artists who don't view themselves as important as the work that they create, he himself, I think, must have viewed himself as a conduit for the value of art in everyone's life.
Mike, thanks for the phone call. Wendy, you want to weigh in on that?
I do. I want to speak to a little bit about Wendell as an educator and sharing his sense of curiosity and his knowledge. He is an artist and was an artist in residence at RIT, and in the more recent years became very, very involved and active in the industrial design department. And you had a clip from Josh Owen. And Josh really embraced Wendell and brought him right into the epicenter of that department. And the students, I believe they understand how lucky they really are to have such a continuous experience with Wendell. They'd go down to his studio, and he'd come into the classroom quite often. And interestingly enough, this weekend, there was a major project up at RIT. It was held in University Gallery. It was organized by the Industrial Design Department. It's called T-Minus. They do it every year. It's an intensive week-long project. This year's focus is on RIT's 50th anniversary of being located on the Henrietta campus. But they used Wendell as their aesthetic. You know, they were channeling his design aesthetic through all of these design projects that they pulled together. But what I thought was really symbolic about it all is that every single one of the students, they broke up into, like, they were about 250 students, and they broke up into groups of 5 to 10. So there's a lot of teams, but they worked collaboratively together. So there were older students mentoring the younger students, but they all generated in a very short period of time some very powerful designs from benches designed for the RIT campus. These were all they're all using a material. There was a massive oak tree on the front end of the campus that blew down in March in a windstorm, and the ID department saved the wood, and they're using the wood to make these projects. But I thought about how amazing the connection was, because Wendell was very obviously focused on trees. He had a lot of tree drawings, and he was going in that direction towards the end of his life, focusing on the tree as a form. That piece that Jonathan was referencing, the gold, it was in a frame, but yeah. It was a tree form within a frame. But I'm rambling, but I'm sort of amazed at how things tend to come together. There's themes that repeat. But the idea that Wendell was interested in youth and discussions about design and was so willing to share his time, and he got so much from the students as well.
He was on the faculty at Brockport, and I know they loved him there, and so his mark is all across our community. Let's listen to him in his own words about whether he intended to do furniture. I mean, as Jonathan Binsack said earlier, you know, he essentially created an art form with furniture, but came to this town not necessarily in that way. So this is Wendell Castle again talking to WXXI for part of our work putting together this documentary on Wendell Castle. Let's listen.
I mean, I didn't know anything about the furniture field when I was, in a sense, thrown into it by accepting a job teaching it, when what I really knew was sculpture. And my original intention, I really didn't have any intention of being a furniture maker, but having this opportunity to come to Rochester and teach really meant that I would be around people who knew a lot about making things. I'd be around other artists that are faculty, and I would have use of this machinery that's here, which previously I was working with almost no decent machinery. So the opportunity I saw is I would continue to make sculpture. But once I realized there was a field, and there weren't very many people in this field, and when I saw what the people who were in the field did, I thought, there's certainly another way to go. They're all making furniture that's really based upon traditional furniture and made the way traditional furniture is made. And I knew that the way I knew how to make things was entirely different, that sculptors don't usually put things together with dovetail joints, or sculptors don't normally veneer, and so on, that I knew how to carve. And so I saw this opportunity, and seeing the field, I thought, there's not a reason in the world that if I work hard, that I can be right up at the top of this field in no time. And I was.
That's an amazing last statement there, Jonathan Binstock, don't you think?
Yeah. He saw an opportunity and he went for it. But the opportunity he saw was only available to his vision, right?
Yeah, he sort of makes it seem like, well, this will be easy. You know, there's not a whole lot of people doing it. Yeah, exactly. Amazing stuff there.
Well, it's that niche I was talking about earlier, right? It's that space in between that's neither furniture nor sculpture that he saw, which nobody else saw.
Sort of both, but not entirely one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, if you define what is sculpture or what is furniture, and if you define those terms, the answer will, for either one of them, will not be a description of Wendell Castle's art.
Well, I want to hit a couple of points here from listeners. And Mimi, I'm thinking of you as a close friend, a longtime friend of Wendell Castle. Here's Dr. Lawrence Sugarman from RIT writing to us to say, Evan, about a decade ago, I was playing an evening on my banjos at the Little Theater Cafe. Yeah. And by the way, does everybody at RIT play banjo? Is that just sort of a
prerequisite?
Yeah, required.
So Dr. Sugarman says, Wendell was there sitting front and center waiting for me to start. He sat and listened attentively for the entire concert. I felt like I had the privilege of playing just for him. He listened as though he was the privileged one. I am grateful for that. And Mimi, I think there's something really beautiful in that email, not just because, oh, it's, you know, this great moment with someone like Wendell Castle, but just the notion of really paying attention to art and locking into it when we're very distracted as a people these days. I wonder if you observe that about Wendell, too, that he cared to really engage with art.
Well, and I actually wanted to sort of take this opportunity because, yes, the art and music, I mean, the passions that the man had was extraordinary. And what he had passions about, they were 100%. And I sort of have the feeling that Wendell will strike me down here in the spot if I don't bring up his tennis. He was an extraordinary tennis player. His 3 or 4 times a week that he played, absolutely nothing could get in the way. We played with him probably this fall, where he had become quite weak and unable to get around the court, but he had a passion for that sport that was just amazing. And he was a phenomenal tennis player, and he also had a passion for cars, and had cars that I don't ask me, I don't know what they were, but whatever he did, the passion was just extraordinary, beyond anything that I've felt about in my life. And but the music, I mean, well, Wendy was there during his last time, and they had John Dady come over and play some of his favorite songs. So,
I was going to talk about a little bit about Wendell and his music and his passion for playing instruments, and Lawrence Sugarman's reference to that. Wendell was I don't know if he would call himself an amateur musician, but he certainly played. He played the baritone ukulele, and he played the guitar, and some of his favorite music came out of the Dust Bowl era. He was a boy from Kansas, and he wasn't born during the Dust Bowl, but he grew up sort of in its aftermath and really saw how it affected his family and his community. He's very passionate about that. He used to tell a lot of stories about how hard it was for people to kind of regroup and make a living. But he had a keen interest in Woody Guthrie's music. So he often played a lot of those songs in his own home, and whenever there was a group of people together, would get together and there would be a sing-along. And Mimi mentioned John Dady came over there and on Wendell's last day and played all their... They used to play together a lot. They were close musical friends and close personal friends, and John came and sang him out. So it was a really wonderful tribute. So the music part of Wendell's life is, I mean, that's something too that we'll also be able to have a reminder of him. But I like Mimi putting a real fresh spin on that. Wendell's gone, but man, his energy is here. His vision is here. He's left a lot of his work for us to enjoy. The exhibition at the Memorial Art Gallery was amazing and opened a lot of people's eyes to his work. They might have heard of him, but they've never seen his work. And I talked to several people, lots of students. They were blown away.
So before I grab another phone call, Steve, hang there if you can for 1 second. I do want to take this moment because the recent exhibit at the MAG closed, a couple of weeks ago now, Jonathan?
Yeah.
And there's a risk in doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway because for the audience, my mind keeps going back to what Mimi said about how many young people in this community, they'll say, Wendell who? And what a shame that is. So let's describe his work a little bit. And I know it's not a visual medium, but this is valuable because this is an artist unlike really anyone in the world. Tell me a little bit about the recent exhibit.
Well, what Wendell essentially did was to take planks of wood and laminate them, glue them together, and create large forms, like box-like forms, and then carve the furniture out of those blocks of stacked and laminated wood. So instead of assembling a chair with small pieces of wood and creating the joints, as he said in one of his clips, he carved the chair out of a solid piece of wood. And that's how the furniture took on a sculptural form. And that's how he could do things with the shape of furniture that no one prior had done. And how he carves is what changes over time. The tools that he used changed over time. And as a result of the evolution of his studio practice, his thought and his imagination evolved. So he was able to envision forms that he could not have envisioned as a younger man. And technology made that possible. The technology that he adopted in 2010 freed his imagination in new ways to create things that he wouldn't have had the patience, the time, the money, or the tools to create, say, in the 60s. And that's what the show was about. It was about where he began and where, as it were, he ended.
So let me grab Steve's phone call, and then I want to end the hour talking about his legacy and how maybe Mimi and Wendy and Jonathan think we can be a Rochester that does know the name more, or certainly in the way Mimi believes, and probably everybody here believes, we should know a little bit more. Steve, go ahead.
Hello, my name is Steve Chibata, and years ago, Wendell was commissioned to build the 500,000 Steinway piano, which I did some videotaping and filming of it. It was an amazing time to spend at his studio in Scottsville, where what they did was they had all of the Steinway artists autographed a sheet of paper. Wendell Castle's crew then took with a dental engraving tool and engraved their signature. It was then filled with white fill. And then the piano was presented. There was a special recital at Carnegie Hall. An amazing piece of furniture, and he had to work with the Steinway people to make sure that the integrity and sound of the piano continued and met their standards. Amazing piece of work that Wendell did.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for that phone call. We're hearing from people like Steve, John earlier this hour, people on Twitter posting their thoughts on Wendell Castle, friends at Roco thanking him for his legacy, also posting us to his 10 adopted rules of thumb, which include, can I read these real quick?
Yes,
do.
Wendell Castle's 10 adopted rules of thumb. If you are in love with an idea, you are no judge of its beauty or value. That is, I don't even think we need 9 more. That's perfect. Number 2, it is difficult to see the whole picture when you are inside the frame. Very good. 3, after learning the tricks of the trade, don't think you know the trade. I could go down the whole list here. It just Mimi, he seemed...
I like the target one.
Yes.
Oh.
I know it by heart,
I think. That's number 10. If you hit the bullseye every time, the target is too near.
Oh, see, that's so good.
Boy, and let me just say, Evan, if our audience or we think that people in Rochester don't know Wendell well enough, you know, just become a member of the Memorial Art Gallery. We've got 5 works of his from our permanent collection on view right now, and there's no shortage of Wendell love and pleasure and aesthetic brilliance to experience there.
So how, Jonathan, then, to Mimi's point earlier, you know, that he is an international name. Yeah. And I loved Josh Owen's story of being in Paris and the reaction that, you know, that Wendell Castle's name can bring around the world. But, you know, he passes away at 85. He worked to the end. There's no reason to think Rochester doesn't know him more. But maybe Mimi's right. Maybe we need to kind of reconnect our own community to him. How do you do that?
Well, I think the challenge is cultivating in our community an appreciation for the value of art, to continue working on that and to continue building that, and Wendell, you know, you can't think about art in Rochester without thinking about Wendell. So that's one way, but that's always the challenge. It's the challenge for any community, that's of course what we're dedicated to, both at the RIT Gallery and at the Memorial Art Gallery. It's hard work.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, you can't just focus on one artist. It has to be an appreciation for art.
Yeah, because
more broadly,
that's exactly right. You have to place Wendell Castle's achievements in the context of achievements of artists from around the world, and that's where he belongs.
Does this start in schools?
Sure, homes and schools people have it. You know, there's nothing more important than taking your pre-teen, you know, 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 8-year-old to the museum to color and paint, or bringing them home watercolors and papers and crayons and to invent with. Something happens at the age, you know, in high school, junior high school or middle school, like we call it these days, or high school. Suddenly all that is not important. It's all about math and science. And I don't know what that switch is that gets flipped, but those concerns remain a part of us. We don't honor them as well as we could.
Hmm. Wendy, what do you think?
Well, I think that, I've been a person who's always had art in my life. I grew up in a household. My mother ran an art gallery. My dad was a graphic designer, art director. My grandmother was a Gobelin tapestry weaver. I mean, I never thought about life without art. And I remember you were joking about art on the walls. I remember going to college. I went to the School of American Crafts at RIT and visiting my roommate's house. She lived here in Rochester. And I walked into the house, and there wasn't a single thing on the walls. And I had never seen an environment like that before. There wasn't a single, not a picture, not a photograph, nothing. Just blank walls. And I walked away from that thinking, how can people live their lives without surrounding themselves with objects of art that inform them on a, you know, every time I look at something that I have in my home that means something to me, it lifts me up. So it does start. It starts at a very young age, but it's very accessible. And Rochester is extremely accessible. You could take yourself, your children, to Anderson Alley, the Hungerford building. I mean, they're packed full of talent. And, you know, talking about investing, art is expensive. It does not need to be expensive. I visited an artist last weekend with my sister, and we both walked away with a beautiful hand-painted piece, and we spent less than $50. I mean, it's there, and the diversity of talent. And, you know, in Rochester Institute of Technology, educating people in photography and printmaking and painting and new media and woodworking and glassblowing. I mean, there's pockets of this brilliance everywhere. We just need to kind of share it, be more aware of it. Once you get the bug, you see how it improves everyone's lives.
Mimi, I want to close the hour with a question for you. And I think of the wisdom that my almost 6-year-old has for me when we think about family members who've passed away. And he recently said, but yeah, Dad, but we get to see them in pictures. And there's something really sweet about that, for a 5-year-old thinking about that. Well, Wendell Castle, we get to see in video. We get to see him in the WXXI documentary that's forthcoming this spring. But as one of his close friends, what will you think of first when you see a picture of Wendell? What comes to mind?
Probably tennis. Yeah, I'd just like to speak to this film, and I'm not acting as an advertisement, but I think when you talk about bringing art to the children, the film really emphasizes the whole creative process that Wendell goes through, and it could be in math and it could be in science. It's not just art. So I think that Tony Mackey, who's done a lot of the filming, has got a vision on that I think is going to be incredibly valuable to a lot of the younger generations here to understand the process and the meeting of passion and looking forward how to go about.
Mimi, as a longtime friend of Wendell Castle, great having you. Thank you so much for being here, and we do look forward to that documentary.
Thanks so much.
And the same to Wendy Marks, the University Galleries Director at RIT, and of course a friend of Wendell Castle.
An honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Jonathan Binstock, Director of the Memorial Art Gallery, thank you as always. Good to have you.
Artist Nancy Jers, we love you. We're thinking of you and your family.
We all wish we were here under different circumstances, but the wisdom and the legacy lives on here. Look for the WXXI documentary coming this spring. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon, and we're back with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.